so let's get started. First of all, thank you for having me back again. It's nice to be back here at Landry College for Men. Spent three really, really wonderful years here. Tonight we're going to talk about kidney donation. There are many, many different ways that you can approach the sugya of kidney donation, but considering that Rav Chaim Kanievsky's tzal just passed away, let's start with Rav Chaim Kanievsky's relationship to kidney donation. He is not a kidney donor. As far as I know, he was not a kidney donor. But there are a couple of interesting stories that relate to Rav Chaim and kidney donation. There was a maisa that there were four brothers that came, whose sister needed a kidney. There was four brothers and one sister, and the woman needed a kidney, and the brothers were arguing about who should be the one to donate the kidney. So there was a similar maisa that happened with the Chaver Knesset, with a member of the Israeli Knesset, who needed a kidney, a Haredi Chaver Knesset, and he had like eight sons, and the father needed a kidney, and this was years earlier, and at the time, all the sons were fighting over who should be the one to get to do the mitzvah of donating the kidney to the father. I mean, they weren't fighting, I don't want to do it, they were fighting, they each wanted to do it. And they went to Rav Eliashiv for Psak Halacha about who should have the zchus of the mitzvah when with this Chaver Knesset. So Rav Eliashiv at the time, what happened was, Rav Eliashiv said, by rights, the oldest brother should have the rights to do it. Mitzvah begadol tchila, for those learning Yavamis now, Daf Yomi. So the mitzvah is begadol tchila, so let the oldest brother do it. But the case was that one of the other brothers got so excited about it that he already started the testing process. So he thought that because he jumped the line a little bit, so maybe he should get kedima to be able to donate a kidney first. Whatever Rav Eliashiv passed him, but that was like a beautiful Kiddush Hashem that all of the sons were fighting dafka that they wanted to be the ones who would donate a kidney. But the story of Rav Chaim Kanievsky was there were four brothers. Some of them were very eager to do it, others not as much, and they decided they're going to do a goral to determine donating the kidney. And the youngest brother won the goral, so to speak. He pulled out the lot that he's going to be the donor. They were all matches. So the youngest brother won the goral. But the youngest brother was not, he was nervous about it. He was not so excited about doing it. So they went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and one of the older brothers said, I'm a little less nervous, I don't mind doing it. Rav Chaim said, no, he won the goral, he has to do it, and it's going to be a big skula for health for him. It should be a big skula that'll be healthy. Which is counterintuitive, because with one less kidney, you're not going to think that he's going to be more healthy. But Rav Chaim said, no, it's a big skula that he's going to be healthy. It's going to be a big bracha for him to go through the surgery. So, okay, Rav Chaim paskins. So that's what they did. The youngest brother wasn't happy about it. That's what he did. They started the surgery. Doctor pulls out the kidney and sees a cancerous growth right under the kidney that had already begun to spread to the pancreas that he would not have realized had they not done that surgery. Obviously, that kidney was useless. They didn't put a cancerous kidney into the sister, but it saved the brother's life that he did that surgery. So that was one. And then one of the other brothers actually donated a kidney that was usable to the sister. So that's one Rav Chaim Kanievsky kidney story. Another Rav Chaim Kanievsky kidney story, and then we'll get into the topic for tonight. Another Rav Chaim Kanievsky kidney story is on the Renewal website. By show of hands, if you're familiar with the organization called Renewal. Okay, so Renewal is the organization, for the half of you who didn't raise your hand, Renewal is the organization that arranges for and helps along in kidney donations in the Jewish community. Meaning if I want to donate a kidney to somebody, I would call Renewal. If I need a kidney, I would call Renewal, and they'll arrange for all of the for all of the testing and to look for a donor and to all the matching, and they'll hold your hand in the hospital through the whole process and all of that stuff. So it's a really, really fantastic organization, really wonderful organization. So on their website, they have another story that somewhat relates to Rav Chaim Kanievsky as well. Here's the story. I'll read it to you. Their stories began years ago on seemingly separate planes. Shlomo was introduced to Renewal during its fledgling years a decade ago. This is probably more than a decade ago. He was inspired by early donors and recipients witnessing the impact of altruistic kidney donation. Just what does altruistic kidney donation mean as opposed to just regular kidney donation?
For money, some of you don't know.
it means somebody you don't know, right? Meaning if let's say a family member needs a kidney, so they don't call that altruistic kidney donation. You're doing that because it's a family or a friend. But if you're donating to a total stranger, they call that altruistic kidney donation. Just an unbelievable stat for you. The percentage of people in the United States of America who are Orthodox Jews, what would you say? The percentage of people, the general population, what did you say?
Less than
0.1? I don't know if it's less than 0.1, but it's definitely less than 1%. Yeah, let's say it's probably definitely less than 1% of people in the United States are Orthodox Jewish, right? Percentage of altruistic kidney donors in the United States who are Orthodox Jewish? About 20%. About 20%. So we're overrepresented in the altruistic kidney donation. Essentially, we're the only ones doing it. Meaning, most normal people don't give kidneys to total strangers. We don't either, really. We give to Jews. And when you give to a Jewish person, that's family. It's just that we have a broader definition of family. It's like Rav Shimon Shkap writes in the introduction to Shari Yosher, you know, his famous interpretation of Im Ein Ani Li Mi Li Ukshani La Atzmi Ma Ani. He says that Ukshani La Atzmi, if my Ani just means myself, then Ma Ani, what am I? Right? My definition of Ani has to be more than just myself. My definition of Ani has to be my whole community, the whole Klal Yisrael. That's how I define me. Part of me is that I'm connected to Klal Yisrael. And that's the way we view the Jewish people. And that's why Jews are giving kidneys altruistically, in the sense that they never met the people before, but that they're brothers and sisters, because they're Jewish people. The rest of the world essentially doesn't do that. Right? If 20% of the altruistic kidney donors in the United States are Orthodox Jewish, we're pretty much the only group that's doing it. In fact, I know a guy who is a surgeon, who's an African American fellow who works in, at the time he worked in Cornell. Now I think he's in NYU, and he does kidney surgeries, to kidney transplants. And he's an African American fellow who grew up in Harlem. And he did good for himself. You know, he's a surgeon, a very good surgeon. And he noticed, like, every Tuesday and Friday when he does surgeries, it's like some 25-year-old skverer chassid that's giving a kidney to like some 65-year-old non-frum man from wherever, you know, and Plano, Texas, or whatever. And he's just, I don't know, I never heard of it. And he's like, what is going on over here? And he inquired, and he became very close with Renewal, and they explained to him their work. And people sometimes. That's the day he does surgeries. So most surgeons don't work every day. I mean, they won't do surgeries every day. They'll have days where they're going and doing their rounds in the hospital and they're meeting people or whatever. But follow up appointments, things like that. So he noticed that kept on happening, and he spoke to Renewal. And you know, people sometimes ask, well, if Renewal is facilitating kidney donations from Jews to Jews, isn't that like a Chilul Hashem, that we're not giving our kidneys to anybody, to like other people? And the answer is that no, it's absolutely not a Chilul Hashem, because the expectation of what we do with the Umos HaOlam is that we should live to the highest standards of morality that are expected of us in the social contract of humanity. Meaning, if the highest standards of morality are that you do not cheat, you do not steal, you do not lie, so we live up to all of that. There is no expectation in society at large, based on the numbers I told you before, there's zero expectation in society at large that you're going to give your kidney to somebody that you don't know. You would give to a family member. And that's what we're doing. And in fact, it's not a Chilul Hashem. It turns out that this is what we call being an Or LaGoyim, because Dr. Watkins is his name, this fellow, decided, if it works for the Jews, maybe I could start something similar in the African American community. Maybe the community where I come from, I could start a similar organization. And he tried. It didn't work out quite as well as Renewal, because obviously, you know, the Jewish people are one family, so it's a different kind of vibe, a different kind of feeling. that we have. But anyway, I'm getting past myself over here. So again, we're up to Shlomo. Shlomo was introduced to renewal during its fledgling years a decade ago. He was inspired by early donors and recipients witnessing the impact of altruistic kidney donation. From then on, he knew in the recesses of his heart and mind that he'd donate a kidney one day as soon as the need arose among his family, friends, or acquaintances. 3 years ago, that opportunity appeared. His brother-in-law needed a kidney. By the way, just like the mentality of a kidney donor, that opportunity appeared. Meaning, you would think that, like, if you have two kidneys, you're very happy to hang on to them. Like, you're not looking for the opportunity. On the kidney donor chat in the Five Towns, when they someone posted an article, there's of course a WhatsApp chat for kidney donors in the Five Towns. So someone posted an article about how they successfully transplanted a pig's kidney into somebody for the first time. They did it into a brain dead patient because you don't take risks on people who are, you know. So and it worked for like an hour, which was a big deal that it worked for. It didn't work long term, but it worked for an hour. So like the impression that you get is that we're just a few steps away. I mean, once they do that, they're getting a lot closer. So you would expect all these kidney donors to reply, "Ah, why did I give my kidney? These people, you know, it's just a few more years, and we won't need human kidneys." The replies were, "Thank God we did the mitzvah while it was still available. Baruch Hashem, we did the mitzvah while it was still available." So the mitzvah is still very much available, and all the people that received those kidneys from the people on that chat would be dead by now if they didn't receive the kidney.
If, let's say, that pig kidney transplant actually becomes viable in 10, 20 years, would it become usher to give one's kidney?
Oh, so it might be. Right, it might be. It depends if a human kidney will still be better than a pig kidney, which it probably will be for a long, long time. Until they can figure out how to 3D print a kidney that's just perfect and that, you know, that works great. Yeah.
Donating a kidney right now is fully on tour.
Oh, so we're going to get to that in a second. First, I want to get to Rav Chaim Kanievsky's story. So we'll get to that in a minute. Okay, so here's the story. So that opportunity finally came. Shlomo's brother-in-law needed a kidney. How amazing. So Shlomo's resolve to donate strengthened. During the same time period, Morris Shasho, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name right, S-H-A-S-H-O. Anyone know anyone by that last name? No? Okay. What?
He's not Persian.
He's not Persian. I don't know. Okay, what kind of last name is Shasho? I don't know. Okay. So, no, I don't think so. I was looking straight at you to figure out how to pronounce that last name. So. Yeah, it's not, you know, yeah, it's not Shashkowitz or Shashoberg or something. So, and his name is Morris. I mean, okay, whatever. All right. So, it's not like Shlomi Shashkowitz. It's Morris Shasho.
Morris.
Yeah.
Morris is Ashkenaz. Right?
Oh, come on.
You think there's a zero course like you're Morris and you name my kid Morris?
Anyway, during the same time period, Morris Shasho watched helplessly as his... I can't wait till you get married. Are you married yet?
Oh, Rabbi. This is one big conversation.
I can't wait till you get...
I
can't wait till you get married and you have a kid and your wife's family has a name Morris that they have to use and you have to name the kid Morris, your first kid. Okay, so during the same... And the middle name is going to be Shasho. So during the same time period, Morris Shasho watched helplessly as his father's health declined. He suffered endless rounds of dialysis as the renewal assistant hunt for a donor continued futilely. Dialysis is Gehenna. By the way, if a person's kidneys are failing, the only way to keep them going is putting them on dialysis. They have to go several times a week, hooked up to a dialysis machine for hours at a time. You should never know. It is absolute Gehenna. The 5-year survival rate on dialysis is less than 50%. Meaning, if you've been on dialysis for 5 years, chances are you're dead. You know, it's not a long-term solution. It is a short-term solution. So when people donate a kidney to someone who's been on dialysis, in the medical community, they call it life-extending surgery. but it's not real. In halacha, we call that life-saving surgery because everything is life-extending, mm-hmm. right? Meaning everyone's going to die eventually, so everything is really just life-extending. But in halacha, when someone is going to die, you know, within a couple of years, and you give them, they're going to have chaye sha'a, and you give them chaye olam, you give them, a road that doesn't have a clear end to it. So then you're life-saving. It's life-saving surgery. So anyway, Morris's dad was on dialysis twice. A donor was found and surgery scheduled twice. The donor had second thoughts or complications and surgery was canceled. That's also a very distressing thing that patients often go through. They need a kidney, they get the great news, we found a donor for you, and then it turns out that the donor says, you know, the kidney donation is what they call a donor-driven process, which means that the donor calls all the shots. The donor says, I only want to, you know, donate on Wednesdays in October. You know, so then that's it. You're the donor. You're the one giving up your kidney. You get to make all those decisions. So if the donor gets cold feet at any point in time, if the donor gets cold feet, he can walk away. That is true halachically also, by the way. You have no obligation to donate a kidney. And even if you were far along in the process, you're allowed to walk away. However, that it's different than bone marrow donation in the following sense. From a halachic perspective and from a reality perspective. Anyone ever donate bone marrow or stem cells that are the equivalent of bone marrow? Have you guys gotten swabbed?
Yeah.
So you got swabbed. So when I was your age, I got swabbed. There was this guy named Jay Feinberg. And in every kosher pizza shop in the country, there was a sign that said, Jay Feinberg needs bone marrow. He's dying. He's sick. He needs... And hundreds of thousands of Jews, because he was an Ashkenazi Jew, so people of Ashkenazi Jewish descent were the best chance of being a match for him. Everyone was getting tested for Jay Feinberg. So I got tested for Jay Feinberg. It happens to be, it's an amazing story. He was interviewed on the Behind the Bima podcast that my dear friend Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg hosts with the other Boca rabbis. And it's an amazing, amazing story that it was the last, very last person on the very last drive that they did before they were going to shut down the whole attempt to save Jay's life. The very last person tested at the very last drive was the one that was his match. And you think, like, all that time you're thinking, it's crazy. And all the time you're thinking, what was all this for? All these efforts, hundreds of thousands of people getting tested for nothing. It led you nowhere. And then the last person, you know what that did for him? The fact that it was the last person? It meant that hundreds of thousands of people were now in the database. I was one of them. And it meant that hundreds of thousands of people are now eligible to save somebody else's life. So I got a call 15 years after that. 15 years later, we think you're a match for somebody. Come for further testing. So I went for further testing, and I was. I was a match for somebody.
Wow.
So you can be a match for bone marrow. The thing is, with bone marrow, it's like a 1 in a million chance to be a match for somebody. It's very, very hard to find an exact match. If you are a match for somebody in bone marrow, there's a reasonable chance that you're their only match, that you're their only chance. And what they do in order to facilitate a bone marrow donation is they clean out the recipient's immune system because they're putting in your immune system into that recipient, which means that if the recipient catches a cold, they could die. Right at that point, meaning they clean out the timing has to be perfect. They put them in like a room where no one else is allowed to go in unless you're in full whatever you call it, like space suit or whatever, the hazmat thing. Right, you're totally and they put in your immune system into the recipient. If last second the donor says not doing it, right, that might be murder, right? Because the recipient's immune system has been wiped out. There's no way the recipient is going to go through the rest of their life without catching a cold. That might be murder. There's a shaila in halacha whether you can have ritzicha b'shevi altas. Reb Chaim has a famous Reb Chaim about this because the guys know salvation. Shir asked for salvation, right? There's a famous Reb Chaim about ritzicha b'shevi altas. If you throw the person on the baby and kills the baby, is that ritzicha b'shevi altas? No, you're just the weapon. You're whatever. There's a famous Reb Chaim about this. If there's such a thing as ritzicha b'shevi altas of murder, passive murder, that's it. That's how you do it, right? If you want to like win the Avera contest of how do you do murder, b'shevi al tasa, that's how you do it. You say that you're a match for somebody, you're going to donate, you wait till the last minute, and then, you know. That's not true by a kidney. By a kidney, first of all, the person can go on dialysis. for a little bit longer, and there's a good chance that they'll find a match. If the person is Jewish, there's a good chance they're going to find a match. If the person is not Jewish, there's very little chance that they're going to find a match, because as I said before, Jews are donating kidneys, other people aren't, typically, for whatever reason. So, like, if you, I don't know what the numbers are now. It used to be, at some point, I think it slowed down a little, but it used to be that if you went to renewal and you were a Jewish person and you were waiting for a kidney, the average wait time was under a year and you'll get a kidney. If you were not a Jewish person and you were waiting for a kidney, the average wait time was over 7 years. Keep in mind, 5-year survival rate on dialysis is less than 50%. So you had a much better chance of dying waiting for a kidney than you have of getting a kidney. But if you're part of this great family called the Jewish people, where there are people donating kidneys all the time, you have a much, much better chance of getting a kidney. Obviously, if that pool of donors continues to perpetuate, it relies on that pool of donors continuing to perpetuate themselves. How did I get into that? Oh, because we said complications, and twice Morris's dad didn't have this, the surgery was canceled. He was 80 years old. A lot of times people just don't want to donate to an 80-year-old. Because who am I going to give my kidney to? You tell me that there's an 8-year-old child that needs my kidney. Well, yeah, I want to put my kidney in an 8-year-old child and give the kid a chance for life. But an 80-year-old, how long are they going to use it for anyway? You know, like my grandfather's Zalzayi Gesundten Stark, you know, he should live to 120 and beyond. You know, my grandfather needed dental work. He's like, what do I need a new tooth for? How long am I going to use it for anyway? No, Zaidi, we hope that you could use it for a long time. No, I'm 94. What are we going to... So you know, there are people that have that attitude. The person's 80 years old. Well, I don't want to give a kidney to an 80-year-old. But 80 is like the new 60, you know? It's like 80-year-olds nowadays are like, you know, running marathons. It's like, it's different. When I was a kid, you know, if you were 70, you were old. Now, like, if someone dies when they're 80, everyone's like, oh my God, he was so young, right? So a third place, so are we following the story? Shlomo wants to give a kidney. His brother-in-law needed one. He was all pumped about giving it to his brother-in-law. Morris's dad needs a kidney. He keeps on failing, keeps on not happening. A third player, meanwhile, was unaware of his contribution to the melody, meaning to the whole how the story came together. Ari Bauman, a musician. Anyone know Ari Bauman? These are probably real names. Ari Bauman, a musician. He is probably Ashkenaz, that's true. Ari Bauman, a musician. Are you racist? Ari Bauman, a musician, had yes, had advertised, can't wait till you marry the whitest girl ever. Ari Bauman, a musician, had advertised his services regularly in a popular publication. He never once booked a client as a result of that advertisement. As he prepared to cancel the ad, a single call came in, booking his one and only gig through that particular advertising channel. Shlomo Weissman, an old friend of Ari's, happened to attend the event. When Shlomo caught sight of Ari, he eagerly approached the musician to catch up, inquiring about his health. Ari, who had undergone quadruple bypass — very often people who need kidneys often have other health problems — so he went on and undergone quadruple bypass, informed Shlomo that his heart was in great shape, but his kidneys were failing. It was the invitation Shlomo had been waiting for since he'd learned about kidney donation. Yeah, since he called renewal on the spot and began the testing process. Oh, yeah, I skipped the line over here. I think somewhere along the way, Shlomo's brother-in-law didn't need, you know, one of the other brothers-in-law were a better match. So Shlomo wasn't able to give to the brother-in-law because one of the other brothers was a match. So Shlomo wanted to give, and now he had no one to give it to. So he meets this guy, Ari, and Ari needs a kidney. Cross-matching showed that Shlomo was an appropriate donor. He enthusiastically began preparing, losing 25 pounds, because if you're overweight, it's not a safe. In general, if you're overweight, nothing's safe. Meaning, like, there's nothing more dangerous to your health than being obese, right? Meaning, you're a higher risk of everything if you're obese. It's not just COVID, right? COVID also, but a higher risk of everything. If you have diabetes and of heart disease and of kidney failure, of everything. You're a higher risk of everything if you're obese. So typically when people want to donate a kidney, they'll lose weight. So he lost 25 pounds and he started telling his family about his upcoming surgery. He sent a messenger to Rav Chaim Kanievsky asking the Gadol, and this is why I'm quoting this whole story today, because Rav Chaim Kanievsky asking the Gadol what kavanos he should have during the transplant. I don't think he realized he's out cold during the transplant. He can't think about us during the transplant. Maybe Reb Chaim could learn a couple of masechtas during the transplant, but you know, he can't have any. But I guess he meant, like, while he's lying on the table, while he's waiting to go in, what kavana should he have? Reb Chaim enigmatically repeated that Shlomo should just learn Torah. An inexplicable suggestion that seemed impossible at the time. It's like, Reb Chaim, do you understand? I'm getting surgery. I can't learn Torah while I'm getting surgery. Like, what kavana should I have? Learn Torah. And he wouldn't say anything else other than learn Torah. Shlomo's delight was rudely shattered with a single phone call mere weeks before the surgery. The hospital informed him that Ari's brother was a better match. So Shlomo was off the hook. Devastation set in. While Shlomo was thrilled that Ari would receive the best possible kidney, he was disappointed by the abrupt end of his involvement. When the day of Ari's transplant arrived, the truth of Reb Chaim's prophetic words dawned on Shlomo. Because where was he? He found himself learning Torah as Ari's surgery was performed. And days later, each of the seemingly unconnected stories converged in a resounding crescendo. Shachris and Shabbos found Shlomo in a shul that he'd recently begun to daven at, a shul in which Morris Shasho prays. After davening, Shlomo recounted the extraordinary story of Reb Chaim's instructions to the rabbi and a few onlookers. He's like, oh, I got a Reb Chaim story for you. And he's telling the rabbi. Morris was sitting nearby in disbelief, shocked by the unmistakable divine intervention. Hashem had clearly sent this man to shul with every detail perfectly coordinated. He approached Shlomo outside of shul, outlining his father's story and asking him to consider donating his newly available kidney to him. His father needed a kidney. A year earlier, Shlomo would have dismissed the notion. After all, he wanted to give his kidney to someone who he knew, not to an 80-something-year-old stranger. But the course of events gave him pause. Perhaps this is what Hashem truly wanted from him. After a few days of deliberation and consultation with his wife, Shlomo agreed to donate to the elder Mr. Shasho. Because both donor and recipient were already on file with renewal and had undergone the necessary testing, the transplant was expedited and took place quickly and smoothly. Shlomo donned the hospital gown with reverence and pride, emotionally informing those present that it was the finest garment he'd ever wear. He recited the bracha of Asher Yatzar with gratitude and intent, awed by the enormity of Hashem's goodness, before walking into the operating room with a serenity unlike anything he'd ever experienced. Everything happens for a reason, and only when Hashem decides it should happen. Morris declares, we searched every corner of the world, but when it was time, Hashem brought Shlomo right to us. Right? He literally walked right into his life and started telling him his story. There are no coincidences in this world. There are flawlessly conducted concertos. Okay, so that's the story of Reb Chaim Kanievsky. One more quick point about Reb Chaim Kanievsky and kidney donation. All poskim hold that it is a great mitzvah to donate a kidney. Right? Nowadays, there were poskim in the past that held that it was aser to donate a kidney. All poskim hold that it's nowadays that it's a great mitzvah to donate a kidney. Someone asked Reb Chaim Kanievsky, why did Hashem give us two kidneys if you don't need both of them? Meaning, you're donating a kidney obviously because you don't need both of them. Then why did Hashem give us two? So the story that I always heard was that Reb Chaim said he gave you one for you to use and one for you to donate, right? It actually appears in Taima Dekra, in one of Reb Chaim's Svarim, and he said, no, obviously the reason Hashem gave us two kidneys is in case one of them fails, that we have backup. But if you have no reason to assume that you're going to suffer from kidney failure, because you get tested and you realize that you have very strong genetics and very strong kidney function, so then there's no reason to maintain a backup. And then the best thing to do with it is to donate it to somebody else. So what I really wanted to talk about tonight is this a mitzvah, a chiyuv, an iser? Someone raised the question before, is it even mutter to donate a kidney? It doesn't sound like. I remember the first time I came across the idea of kidney donation. I was a Rebbe in DRS High School in Woodmere, and we used to have a parsha pamphlet, called Dvar Mayotzim Min Halev. And every once in a while, they'd stick an advertisement in there, like a flyer advertisement in there. And one time there was a flyer, a local man, I remember, I think it was Richie Jedwab, who passed away since then, but passed away a few decades later, needs a kidney. And I was like, local man needs a kidney? Like, who on earth is just going to say, oh yeah, I'll give a kidney? Like, it was so foreign to me that someone would even do that. This is before renewal was you know, a thing. It was so foreign to me that someone would do that. You know, to donate blood, okay, you know, of course we all do that. You know, so they say Rav Nevensal Shlita had to be turned away. They had to, because he kept on donating blood over and over and over again. Because like, he keeps saving more Jewish lives, you know, keep giving more blood. So they had to tell him, like, stop already, you know, you need some for yourself. But to donate blood, okay, mainly you'll donate blood. Bone marrow, you know, nowadays when you donate bone marrow, it used to be they'd stick a giant needle in your back and it was a painful procedure. Nowadays, I can tell you because I did it, they do it with stem cells. So if you're a match for somebody, so I remember I went to Stony Brook Hospital. My oldest son was in, I think, 7th or 8th grade at the time. So I brought him along with me. My wife had to work. She couldn't come. So I brought my oldest son with me to keep me company for the day. They send a car to drive you there. And you sit down in a chair. They put a needle in this arm and a needle in that arm. And the blood comes out of this arm and it goes through a magical machine where they take out all the stuff that they need from your blood. And then it goes right back into that arm. And you sit like that for about 7 hours. And then they get everything that they need. And then, but it's not painful at all. It's just like annoying because like you have to sit like that. So that's why I needed my son to, you know, to work the iPad for me. I mean, to turn the pages of the Gemara for me. So he was like when I brought my son, they said, "You brought a kid?" I'm like, they're like, "You can't bring a kid into the hospital for a procedure." I'm like, "I need someone to, you know, handle the iPad." but you can't bring, I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Send him home? We're in Stony Brook. So they let him stay. So it was like 7 hours like that. And then you go home and the next day you're fine. You know, like a day later, I was, I remember we had a family wedding in Montreal the following day. And my wife told me, "Look, you can go do whatever you want, go save the world or whatever, but you are driving to Montreal tomorrow, you know, to this family wedding." So I remember we woke up at like 4 a.m. to beat the traffic or whatever, and we drove to Montreal the next day. We did, it was, I don't know, 6-7 hour drive or whatever it was. And I took a nap when I got there, but I was fine the next day. Because I'm Ashkenaz? So I actually once got a shayla. I know this isn't the topic, but I once got a shayla. A woman called me. She was a bone marrow match for somebody also. She also got tested, and she was from Gift of Life. And she was Gift of Life is the bone marrow ones. So she was a match, and she was all excited to do the mitzvah. And the timing of the procedure was very critical for the recipient. And they told the woman that she would be needed on, they gave her a date, it was September 18th. They told her it was the date of the transplant. She looked at the calendar and saw September 18th was Erev Yom Kippur. And she has a hard time fasting as it is. And this is going to make it even more difficult if she spends 7 hours, you know, hooked up to needles on Erev Yom Kippur. So she asked them if she could do it a week earlier. Like a week, can we change the date of the procedure? And they told her, which doctors later told me doesn't really make sense, but this is what she told me, that they told her, "We can do it a week earlier, but it's really not perfect if we do it that way. We're going to have to freeze it and then use it a week later," meaning it's not great. It's not going to be the best. It's not going to be, there's nothing as good as the fresh stuff. So we could do it a week earlier, but it's not going to be as good. So we'd really rather do it in Erev Yom Kippur. So her shaila is she allowed to do it a week earlier? Is she obligated to do it a week earlier? And if she does it in Erev Yom Kippur, does she have to fast? Right? That was her shayla. What would you say?
It sounds like a kind of question. Yes. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be a problem.
You said you were fine, huh?
Right. So I was fine the next day. So I said, let me speak to the doctor and find out, like, whether my experience was typical. I mean, I was fine the next day. I don't know if everybody is. So I spoke to her doctor. Her doctor said, "Rabbi, I'm a Jew also. I'm a Reform Jew. And in the Reform Judaism, we believe that human life is the highest value." I said, "Oh, that's great, because in Orthodox Judaism, we also believe that human life is the highest value." And he said, "No, you don't." How rude. I'm like, "Who's the Orthodox rabbi, me or you?" And he's like, "No, you don't." I'm like, so I never like to pull this card, but like, once he's being so snotty about it, I'm like, "Excuse me, I'm a bone marrow donor. Are you?" And he's, right away, his whole tone changed. "Oh, you donate?" You know, like he thought I was just trying to get the woman out of having to donate because I think fasting Yom Kippur, which doesn't mean anything to him, is more important than saving a person's life. So anyway, I said, I told him, like, the next day, my wife made me drive to Montreal, and I did. And, you know, so he said, look, 90% of the time, that's what happens. I'm like, really, 90% of people's wives make them drive to Montreal? So he didn't laugh. He didn't think that was funny. But I thought it was pretty funny. So, but he said, but every once in a while, a person has a hard time, and it takes them a little longer to recuperate. So I remember I felt ill-equipped to really pasken that shaila. So at the time, there was a great posek who was still alive, who passed away now about a year ago, Rav David Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And I called Rav David, and I told him the situation. I said, I have this difficult shaila. He said, you don't have a difficult shaila. You have two easy shailas. You're just confusing it as one big difficult shaila, which I thought was a fascinating way to look at it. I said, what do you mean? He said, one shaila is, should she do the surgery earlier, I mean the procedure earlier, or do it later? Earlier has less of a chance of saving a life. Later has a better chance of saving a life. That's pasha, safek pikuach nefesh. Of course you should do the procedure later. That's not a shaila, right? Meaning that's an easy shaila. Now your shaila is, how ill does she have to be to not have to fast in Yom Kippur or to do shiurim? He's like, you're a rabbi of a shul. You get that shaila 1,000 times every year. You know, just go through, you know, go through whatever normal processes you go through in terms of determining that shaila. That was taka very good, right? That was a good way to think about it. That's why he was Rav David Feinstein. So it happens to be at the end, the woman developed a tooth infection, and it disqualified her from being a donor. Like even something minor like that, a tooth infection would disqualify her from being a donor. So she ended up not donating bone marrow. I don't know what happened to the patient.
Yeah, but,
she,
but in that situation, what really would have been the psoch
for? So it depends how she's feeling. Right? It would depend how she. I mean, she would do Erev Yom Kippur, and she was feeling like I was feeling. She should fast. Definitely stay in bed, right? But otherwise, start doing shiurim, or if she's feeling really sick, you know. But it would depend how she's feeling. Back to kidney donation. Oh boy. Okay. So kidney donation. Let me phrase the whole sugya with another shaila that I got about kidney donation. A few years ago, I got a phone call from a guy who lives on the West Coast of the United States, and he told me that. That he had asked my brother this shaila. My brother is a chashuv Talmud Chacham. He's the Talmud Chacham in the family. And my brother sent him to me because my brother knew that this is a topic that I'm more connected to. So the shaila was as follows. This fellow was not making a living. He was really struggling. He's a Sephardi guy, Baal Tshuva. You know, very sincere, very sweet, right, you know the type, like a Baal Tshuva who's like really just wants to do everything right and is very, and plus that, the Tamimistic Sephardi thing, very trusting and a lot of Yir Shamayim and, what does Ravina say? A lot of Yir Shamayim, just not so much Yir Shchait sometimes, but like... What?
He says God is
Sephardi. Right. But so of course I mean, so he was very sincere, always wanted to do the right thing, and but he was having a very difficult time making a living. And then he was driving an Uber for a living, just because that's something anybody can do, I guess. And as he's driving his Uber around the West Coast, he was trying to think of his business idea that's going to make him money, right? So he came up with an idea. He started a business, and a year or two later, he's making millions of dollars. Like, he's, like, raking it in. So he feels so much hakar zatov to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He wants to do something good. So he starts giving a lot of tzedakah. Chomesh nechasov, 20% of his money, he starts giving to tzedakah. He still feels like he wants to do more for the Ribbono Shel Olam. So he started going around to all the local rabbis of the local shuls where he lives, asking if there's anyone that needs a job. And he started hiring all the people who were out of work to work for him in his new company. Like the highest form of tzedakah, right? And then he says, you know what? I want to do more. I feel so much accursed to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I want to save a life. Thing is, he's not a medical professional, so how is he going to save a life? He said, I have two kidneys. I want to donate a kidney. On his own, he just decided he wants to donate a kidney. But he wants to donate a kidney to a Jew. So he figures he's going to go where the Jews are. He'll go to Israel and donate a kidney. And he was telling one of his friends his plan, and the friend said, you know, you don't have to go to Israel. Like, he doesn't, the guy's a Baal Tshuva, he has no family in Israel, no friends in Israel. He was literally, he has three little kids at home. He was going to fly to Israel, donate, you know, walk into Shari Tzedek, say, take one, right? And like, and then like, get a hotel room to recuperate in for a couple of weeks in Israel all alone, and then fly back. Like, that was his game plan, because he had to go where the Jews are if he's going to save a Jew. And one of his friends said, no, there's an organization called Renewal, you know, you can they'll find you a Jew in America. Like, you don't have to do that. So he called up Renewal to, you know, and they asked him a series of questions. And the first question they asked him, not the first question, but one of the questions they asked him is, do you have any preferences? And he didn't even understand what that meant. Preferences? He's like, yeah, I prefer to donate a kidney. They're like, no, meaning like, you Dafka wanted to go to an older person, a younger person, a from person, a not from person, a Sephardi or Ashkenazi, male or female, you know, whatever. It's up to you. It's your kidney. You can give it to whoever you want to give it to. So now he started thinking, well, that's an interesting Shaila. Should I choose? Or should I just say, nah, whoever you want to give it to? I mean, just make sure it's a Jew. Right? So what do you tell you now? What? Give it to a Talmud Chacham. Why? It's an option. You can give it to whoever you want. Give it to a lady so she can have kids. What? Okay. Ish? So okay, does it have to be a Jew, or could it be someone else? So probably it should be a Jew. Probably it has to be a Jew, because probably you shouldn't put yourself in any sort of mitzvos benon mechavero typically don't apply to non-Jews, other than to the extent that it's part of the social contract of society. So you're supposed to be the most moral and upstanding citizen of this society. People don't give kidneys in this society.
Does that mean that you risk your life for a non-Jew or not?
You don't.
You don't?
Generally, no, you would not. So that was the Shaila. So the Shaila assumes that it's mutter to donate a kidney. Right now, is that so obvious? So it wasn't always so obvious. I think it was 1960 that they started doing the first kidney donations, and at the time it was dangerous because they didn't know nearly as much as they know now. Like, for example, even the way they did the surgery at the time, they would just rip the person open, cut the person open, and do the, you know, and they didn't even know how to test the kidney properly to know if it was a proper match. So most of the time it didn't even work. They would take out your kidney, put it in someone else, failed. Oh, I guess we'll try again next time. So, like, there was a very high failure rate. And the surgery was Gehenna to go through because they'd rip your whole body open to find your kidney. Nowadays, you know, it would be like they'd rip you open. They'd be like, oh, where's that thing? You know, like it was a crazy. Nowadays, they make like a 2-inch slit in your belly button. They stick a camera in there so they could see where they're going, and they just vacuum out the kidney. They zip you right back up, and they and you've been tested 15 different ways, sideways and whatever, and they know that kidney is going to work, and they transplant it to the other person's very, very high success rate. Not 100%, but very high success rate. So in the early days, there were poskim that said it's usur to donate a kidney because you're not allowed to put yourself in sakana in order to save, to potentially maybe save somebody else. That's a fascinating sugya in halacha. To what extent are you allowed to put yourself in safek sakana to save somebody else? Nowadays, it's not, it's the, you know, if someone were to die donating a kidney, it would be a huge chiddush. Meaning, to the extent that if someone were to die donating a kidney, they would probably shut down that hospital's transplant ward for 2 years to reassess everything that they do. It means somebody made a big mistake. There was a story a couple of years ago where there was a guy that died donating a kidney, and they found out that the surgeon was using clamps that had been recalled. And the surgeon knew that they had been recalled, but he said, that's for people who don't know how to use them, but I know how to use them. You know, the guy of... it was recalled that it wasn't safe. He was using Kalin that were no longer... maybe that's one of the pshatim in that Mishnah, yeah. So nowadays it's a very, very safe procedure, relative, meaning every time you undergo surgery there's some risk, and they'll tell you all those risks, you know, because they're afraid of lawsuits, so they'll tell you every detail of every risk. But it's a very, very safe procedure, and you're likely giving a person 15 more years of life. and not being on dialysis, meaning eventually your kidney is going to fail in that person also, but it will give them, you know, a good 15 years of good health very often. 15 years is a long, long time. They take kidneys from dead people, but they'll only last for about 5 years.
Does the Gemara Sanhedrin says that you can't like stand, is it Gemara, or that you can't stand idly by?
So the Pasuk says, Osamen al dam reyecha, that you're not allowed to stand idly by when someone needs your, you needs your help.
You're not allowed to what?
If, let's say, someone is in distress and they need your help and you know how to help them, it's an isser. You're not allowed to stand there and do nothing.
Yeah.
You have to help.
What?
Not to put yourself in sakana.
But not to put yourself in sakana. Nachon. In fact, I'll tell you a maisa with that, a story that I met a Baal Tshuva once, and I asked him what... He's actually speaking on a Shabbaton in DRS, and the boys asked him, he was like a Hollywood writer or something, so he was like, you know, a good Shabbaton speaker type. And then the guys asked him, what made you decide to become a Baal Tshuva? And he said he was in law school. He was in Cordoza Law School. And one day they learned about the Good Samaritan Law, which is a law that says that if you are a medical professional and you see someone in distress and you help them out, that you can't be sued for helping them out. Right? And then he said, wow, what an amazing country we live in that encourages people to help. It's so moral, it's so ethical. And then the next day he was taking a Jewish law class because he heard it was an easy A with Rabbi J. David Bleich, Rabbi Yehuda David Bleich, and Rabbi Bleich taught them about the halacha of Lo Samer Adam Re'echa. That not only can you not be sued for trying to help, but you're not allowed to not help. You're obligated to help. And he said at that, it was like a light bulb went off. Like the day before, I thought I heard the most moral, ethical thing I've ever heard in my life. And then the next day, I heard something that dwarfs it in terms of its moral, you know, rightness. So he said that was it. That, you know, I was in. As soon as I heard that, I was in. So anyway, to put your life at risk is a major machlokas aposkim, whether you're allowed to put your life at risk. There's a famous Gemara about Mitzvah Dav Samach Beis, where two people are walking in a desert and there's one canteen of water. So Ben Petura says, split it and let them both die. Ad shebar Rabbi Kiva v'limeit chayecha kodmin l'chayecha vircha. Your life comes before somebody else's life. So if you would die, you put your own life first. But what the Gemara doesn't talk about is, what if it's a suffix sakana? What if you're not sure if you would die? You're in pretty good shape and you might be able to make it through the desert, but the other guy's definitely going to die. So the Gemara does not talk about that case.
Isn't that how some learn the Gemara, that we talk about suffix enough?
What's that?
Isn't that how some learn the Gemara there?
So it's a machlokas aposkim. Beis Yosef b'chosh mishpasim tav chavav, and the Hagos Maimonios and the Chosh Tzeach, says that you're obligated to put yourself in suffix sakana in order to prevent someone from dying. However, in Tshuvas HaRadvaz, he says that someone who puts themselves in suffix sakana in order to save someone from dying is a chassid shota. Chassid shota is not a compliment. It means that you know, you're being stupid. You're trying to be a righteous person. You're being an idiot.
Isn't it considered sakana anymore?
So, okay, one second. In the Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch HaRav says that you're allowed to put yourself in suffix sakana to save someone else's life, but you're not obligated to. So you have three different opinions about that. Clearly, Rav Asher Weiss points out, it clearly depends on the level of risk, right? It depends how risky it is. Even the Radvaz himself, in a different tshuva, says that one of the reasons you don't have to give an aver to save a life is the suffix sakana, but he still calls it a midas chasidus to do so, and not a chasid shota. So obviously, depending on the level of risk, it's gonna change. So because of that, it would seem that with a very low level of risk, it's at least a big mitzvah. A chiyuv, hard to call it a chiyuv, to take an organ out of your body that doesn't grow back. I would argue that if you are a bone marrow match to somebody, that would be a chiyuv, because the person's going to die without you, likely, and it grows back for you, meaning your stem cells are going to come back. When it comes to giving a kidney, that's an organ that's not going to come back. I don't think it's called sakanas aver. Sakanas aver would mean like, you know, you're going to lose a finger that's not going to grow back, where you actually lose functionality. If a person loses one kidney and they have another very healthy kidney, their life is exactly the same. I mean, they tell you shouldn't box or play tackle football because, you know, if you have a direct trauma to the one remaining kidney, that would be very dangerous. But, you know, you probably shouldn't box or play tackle football anyway because you also only have one brain in life. insane to do that. So so probably that, you know, it's at least a very great mitzvah.
Doesn't like a Mars Hadron go through if it's like Shavuot Aveda or something, and therefore it would be like a kind of chiyuv to do it?
So it's a good question why it's not a chiyuv to donate a kidney. There's no poskim that say it is a chiyuv. There is a tshuva sefer called Vaya'an David, of David Weiss, who is a Satmar Dayan in, I think, Antwerp, who writes beautiful tshuvas. He has like 8 or 9 volumes of Vaya'an David. And I had heard that he paskins that you're mechuyev to donate a kidney. And I was stunned because I never heard that. Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva where he says, Karov l'chiyuv, but he doesn't say chiyuv. Karov l'chiyuv. So, or Karov anilom, or something like that. So I had to get my hands on this tshuva. So I went to Beagle-Eisen, which is like the farm store in Borough Park where they have everything. It's like the size of, like, you know, from this desk to the end of the room over there. And somehow they fit every sefer in the world. And everything's just piled up everywhere. And I walked in and I said, Tshuvas Vayan David. And the way I remember it, the guy's like, oh, here, I got 4 of the volumes right here. And I was like, how did you do that? And so I bought all 4, and very, very beautiful tshuvas. The tshuva where he actually talks about donating a kidney was a very specific case. It was about a guy donating to his wife. So that might be a chiyuv. That might be a chiyuv. If he was a perfect match for his wife. Yeah, meaning, yeah, he has to be a chiyuv. But also, like, it's a relative. It's like there's an understanding that, like, that's something a relative should do for, you know, for somebody. What? Yeah, yeah. And there's very little risk. Again, it's hard to explain why it's not a chiyuv for everybody, but it's not. I don't think anyone really holds it's a chiyuv for everybody. I once gave a whole shiur here, actually. I gave the shiur here about why it's not a chiyuv to donate a kidney. So then we just get back to the shaila of who comes first, right? Oh, there's also a further shaila. If you do donate a kidney, are you obligated to publicize it? I remember I asked the shaila, why would you be obligated to publicize it? The way renewal works, the way the whole organization works, is that you find out that the guy that sits next to you in shul just donated a kidney, and you're like, oh, he looks healthy. Wow, he did such a great mitzvah. And he talks about it, and he says, yeah, it was so inspiring, and I was able to save someone's life, and whatever, and it has an impact. And then others start doing it. There's a major copycat effect. That's the way the whole thing works. So Rav Asher Weiss, when I donated my kidney, I asked Rav Asher Weiss if I have to publicize it. At the time, I very much did not want to publicize it. He said, you don't have to publicize it, probably because there's no, you know, particular life that you could identify that you're going to save by publicizing it. Rabbi Willick thought that it's 100% the proper thing to do to publicize it, because people will. People will react to that, and you get a lot of people that will tell you, once, you know, I saw that you did it, and so I tried it also. I just had a friend 2 weeks ago donated a kidney, Rabbi Arya Yudin, and he said, yeah, once I saw that my brother-in-law Rabbi Rothwax and my friend Rabbi Leibowitz, and so it's like it creates this, like, oh, and they're okay, and they're, so it sort of creates this this comfort level with doing it. So it is something that has a tremendous impact on other people around you. So I think that's an important. Now, as far as who comes first, I realize I'm running later here already. So as far as who comes first, I'll just try to wrap it up. I happen to have been in Israel when I got that shiloh, if the guy should give a preference, man, woman, tamalchachon, amaretz, you know, all that stuff. So I asked 2 people at the time. I asked Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, who is, you know who Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein is? He's Rav Eliyashiv's son-in-law, Rav Chaim Kanievsky's brother-in-law. He used to have a chavrusa with Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He's the one that was on the Israeli news on Motzei Shabbos. Please, Shmatim Ol V'Nafshu Seichem was Rav Chaim's biggest concern. Don't stampede, don't push, don't, you know, like he was really begging everyone to, and Baruch Hashem went okay, the Levaya went okay. And I asked Rav Victor Nevensal, I assume guys who went to Nativ know Rav Victor Nevensal, do the rest of you know Rav Victor Nevensal? So Rav Zilberstein told me, someone who donates a kidney doesn't have to donate it at all, it's no chiyuv. But once you're doing it, might as well do the biggest mitzvah possible. So save a Talmud Chacham, give it to a Talmud Chacham. He said, if you give it to someone else, you're also doing a great mitzvah. But you might as well do the greatest mitzvah. Right? So he said, give it to a Talmud Chacham. I thought that was incorrect. that that was not correct. Rav
Zilberstein
did.
They both said that?
What?
They both said that?
No. I'll tell you what Rav Nevensal said. I thought it was incorrect, and I asked Rav Nevensal if my cheshbon was correct. And Rav Nevensal told me that he thought I was correct, that my cheshbon was correct. It happens to be Rav Zilberstein said, if I see someone walk in, they could be a 16-year-old punk kid who's not from or whatever. If he walks in and he's a kidney donor, well, a 16-year-old shouldn't be a kidney donor, but whatever. He said, if someone walks into this space medrash, I remember we were sitting in the back of his space medrash. He said, if someone walks into this space medrash and I know that they're a kidney donor, I'll stand below Komasi. I'll stand up for them, to my full height. So that's when I made the decision not to tell Rav Zilberstein that I'm a kidney donor, because that would be mortifying. So I asked Rav Nevensal, my cheshbon was like this, that it's true, the Mishnah in Maseches Horio says, Kohen kodem lelevi, levi kodem leYisrael, nish kodem leisha, and afilu mamzer tamal chacham kodem lekohen gadol am haaretz. Right? You should better save a tamal chacham rather than save an am haaretz. But I thought that Mishnah is talking about a case where you have two people that are both in equal danger, and you could save one of them. So then you should prioritize the tamal chacham over the am haaretz. But imagine you're passing by a river, and it's not that there are two people flailing and drowning, and you're only going to have time to save one of them. You have one person that knows how to swim, and they're doing okay, and they're swimming and they're doing laps. There's no way out for them, so they're going to need someone to come along and save them, but it's not a rush for them right now. And the other person is flailing and drowning already. If the person who knows how to swim is a Talmud Chacham, do you save that person? Or do you save the person who's flailing and drowning right now? I mean, if there's a much greater need, and I found Rav Moshe says this in the Tshuva, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Rosh Moshe, if there's a much greater need for one of them, that's the one you save. And then you hope with the time that the other person has, someone else will come along and save the other person. If you don't give a preference to them and you just tell them that you want to save a lot, that you want the kidney to go to where the greatest need is, they'll give it to the person who's next in line, who needs it the most. And then, hopefully, eventually, Talmud Chacham will be saved also. And that's why, when I donated, the question never even occurred to me to ask. I just said, of course, just give it to the greatest need. And Rav Nevensal said that's 100% correct. That's what you're supposed to do. So, and it also happens to be, when you donate a kidney, the recipient tends to be very appreciative. They're not allowed to give you money, right? That should never happen. It's illegal. But they tend to be very appreciative, and they want to do something to show their appreciation. I know there's a guy, Nassanal Feller, who lives in Far Rockaway, who donated a kidney a couple of years before I did. And he told, it was a Russian woman, and he told the woman, one request. My kidney has never been nourished by non-kosher food. I would like you to keep kosher. She wasn't religious, and she started keeping kosher because she said, it's the least I could do. The man saved my life.
Does that correspond
to you? You get to meet them in advance if you want. You get to meet them afterwards if you both want, only if you both want. Or if you don't want, if either one of you doesn't want, then you never meet them. I never met my donor. I was never interested. But you can, I'm my recipient. I mean, I was never interested in meeting them. But most people do. Most people eventually do want to meet them. So Nassanal Feller told her only kosher food. And her daughter was so inspired by the whole interaction that her young daughter, who was in her 20s, started becoming frumer and frumer and frumer, married a frum guy, made aliyah. So now, like, the whole family is frum, living in Israel, because of Nassanal Feller's kidney that made its way into this woman. My recipient, I heard, I had a maisa, I told this to Zilberstein, he was very moved by it. I had a maisa that renewal is very connected to this yeshiva. Josh Sturm is the Rabbi Josh Sturm from Staten Island, used to be the Shaul Meshev here, and when renewal was looking for someone, it was an organization started by Hasidim, but they needed someone who was not a Hasid to relate to other kinds of people. So they asked, Rabbi Sachs is very connected to a lot of Hasidim. So I don't know if you know this. In the summer, he goes to the Hasidish bungalow colony, and like he gives shiurim on Shabbos to like 400 shrimals. They're like, one time, they like, oh, we heard that guy's a rabbi, maybe we'll ask him to give a shiur. And they asked him to give a shiur, and everyone was like, what? So now he gives a shiur to like 400 shrimals every Shabbos in the summer. So he was connected with the Hasidim that started renewal, and they needed like a non-Hasid who could relate to, people like you and me. He said, oh, have a shol l'meshev in yeshiva, it would be perfect for the job. And he hooked up Josh Sturm with the job. And that's what, so the renewal has deep roots in this yeshiva. But so Josh Sturm called me. I think he's the one that called me. He said that when my recipient was a 60-something-year-old non-religious man, who had two kids or whatever, but you know, not yet observant or whatever, you know, whatever you call it. That's all they told me about him. But he said that on the way home from the hospital, the man asked if they could stop at a Judaica store to buy tefillin, because he heard that it was a rabbi that donated his kidney, so he wanted to, he thought the least he could do was to get tefillin. So I mentioned that to Rav Zilberstein. I told him, I know somebody, I'm very close to somebody, you know, Adam Karavei Talatzma, you know, so I told him that this happened to, and Rav Zilberstein said, tell your friend, he should call them back and say, and also, I want you to keep kosher, and also, I want you, like, you don't do that, you don't start making religious demands, I don't think you can, you know, start. But anyway, it's a very great mitzvah, it seems to be. It's not something you should do at your age, obviously. I mean, you wait till you're a little bit older and, you know.
What's wrong with our age?
It's just you don't yet know enough. You know, they can't yet predict whether you're going to have kidney problems in 20 years from now. You want to wait till you're, I don't know, 35, 40 years old. It will be better. You'll know that you're still in good health and... it's just a better time in life too, don't it? Plus you'll be married and there will be someone there to take care of you, to help you recuperate. You know, the recuperation is, you know, it takes a couple of weeks till you get back to yourself. I remember I was teaching here when I donated my kidney, and Rabbi Sachs was amazing, because they switched my surgery. I was going to do it during winter vacation, but the recipient really needed it done a week earlier for whatever reason, so they switched it a week up, so I was going to miss the last week of yeshiva. So I asked Rabbi Sachs, and he was like, totally, you know, like, of course, no problem, totally do it. So I ended up getting 3 weeks off, you know, after to really recuperate, which was really, really nice. You know, that helped a lot. I wrote a whole sefer during that time, because I was all alone doing nothing all day and up all night because I couldn't sleep. So it was like, what? It was uncomfortable to sleep. So like, I found myself like pacing around the house at like 3 a.m. a lot. So ended up, you know, I was keeping Rabbi Sachs hours for a few weeks. So so that's, you know, it's amazing. You wonder how he pumps out all those svarim. So that's okay. So anyway, thank you all for coming. And
everything.
What's that?
More Syrian.
He's Syrian. Okay, fantastic. All right, we googled it. He's top on the list. Yeah, yeah, that is true. They put you at the top of the list. Some people, although this is stupid, but some people will donate just as an insurance policy. Because if you suffer kidney failure, both of your kidneys are going to fail. But if you donated a kidney and then you suffer kidney failure, you'll be on the top of the list.
What?
It's very rare, because usually they test you 1,000 ways to make sure that you're at very low risk of having kidney problems if you're a kidney donor. In fact, they find that, you know, people say, well, doesn't it take away your life expectancy? Statistically, they in one of the studies that they did, kidney donors live longer than non-kidney donors. And, you know, so very religious people say, oh, wow, the Hashem is watching over. No, it's because kidney donors are the healthiest people in society. Because they test you, they test your heart, they test everything about you before you're a kidney donor. So, of course, you live longer. Okay, take care. Have a good one.
Take care.